T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
On this edition of Profiles, we welcome KMOX alum and broadcaster Bob Costas, who is in the Baseball Hall of Fame, has 28 Emmys to his name, and recently sat down with us for a wonderful conversation.
Welcome to Profiles. From entertainers to athletes, political leaders to entrepreneurs, Profiles gives you an insight into what has made these unique personalities who and what they are today. Now, Profiles on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Bob Costas, you're in town to receive the Red Award, named in honor of Red Shandies, at the annual Baseball Writers Dinner. Great to have you back on Where It All Began for you, KMOX.
Hello, Chucky B.
So, good night last night. Thumbs up all around.
Yeah, it just ended. I had time to grab breakfast, shower, and refresh myself and come over.
We did get you a bacon Gouda sandwich if you are hungry.
Oh, God. Seriously, why don't you just inject it into my left ventricle?
You don't care for
bacon Gouda?
Well, bacon is a staple of the American diet.
Yes,
I'm sorry.
It is. Yes, it is.
What would you ordinarily eat? Let me guess.
I actually have already had breakfast.
Okay, so you won't need the extra food. How about a skin latte?
Well, I believe that's already on its way.
On its way is right.
Yeah. I had an egg white omelet with tomato and spinach.
Watching our cholesterol.
Yeah.
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 In fact, I got my cholesterol taken last Friday morning.
And?
And, well, the results will be this Friday.
I see.
Yeah.
Are you on pins and needles?
You know what? I really cheated because I was eating like brown rice and vegetables last Monday through Thursday, and then I fasted. And then afterwards, I had bacon and hash browns and scrambled eggs after I gave blood.
I believe you're missing the point.
I know.
The point is not to ace the test and fool the doctor. The point is to get an accurate read on where you stand.
Well, you can, if you deliver the eulogy at my funeral, you can say, I told him.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's good to have you here, and congratulations once again on,
thank you.
By the way, the skim latte is in the house, along with, he doesn't want the bacon Gouda sandwich, as it turns out.
Give it to Chucky B.
Yeah, that's right. I already had my cholesterol test.
You're right,
actually,
exactly.
Give it to James. James, have you eaten yet? He doesn't want it either. Boy, a bunch of health nuts here. So congratulations again.
Why, thank you.
And so many things to talk about. Did you watch football all day long yesterday?
Well, actually, the dinner last night overlapped the Patriots and the Chiefs. I saw a good portion of the Saints and the whoever they were playing. I forget. The Saints and the Rams. That's right. The Rams defeated the Saints.
And now St. Louisans know how Los Angelinos felt around the year 2000. What goes around comes around, huh?
Yep.
Yeah, that's the way it works. And you actually pointed that out. You were one of the locals who kind of... you were a prophet not honored at your time because you were saying, you know, how do you think Los Angelinos feel when we take their ball club?
Well, it's all a case of whose ox is being gored, and people lose their minds over sports, and they commit public funds that might otherwise go to more pressing needs. So think about the Cleveland Browns, truly a flagship franchise of the NFL. They up and moved to Baltimore because they couldn't get the proper deal in their eyes, and they became the Ravens. And fans in Baltimore celebrated that. It was like a wondrous event for the city. And yet only a generation before, actually less, about a decade before, their beloved Baltimore Colts had up and left for Indianapolis. The Colts and the Browns were historic franchises both, flagship franchises of the NFL. When, to Baltimoreans, the Colts went to Indianapolis, that was an awful, terrible betrayal. But when the exact same thing happened to Cleveland and the beneficiaries were Baltimore, that was cause for celebration. There's no logic behind that. And I did a commentary on NBC before the first game that the Ravens played, right along the sideline, and said that. And ironically, they were playing, I forget whether they were Los Angeles or Oakland Raiders at that time, but they were playing the Raiders, who had played that back-and-forth game constantly, trying to extort money from various locales and suing the NFL and whatever. So, you know, it is what it is. But when the Rams came here from Los Angeles, I felt the same way. It's just whose ox is being gored.
Do you sometimes feel it's all for naught because God love the sports fan, and they're wonderful people, but when it comes to some of these issues, they check their reason and logic at the door because they could become fans. And I think fan is kind of short for fanatical,
yeah,
which means illogical.
Yeah. Well, that's true. That's true. I think I mentioned this one of the last times I was here. Every network broadcaster, you talk to Joe Buck, you talk to Al Michaels, Jim Nance, whomever it may be, has experienced this. You're biased against my team. But that's because they are seeing it through the prism of their own irrational fandom or comparing it to their local announcer who obviously has a team-oriented slant. No network broadcaster has ever gotten a letter or now an email or a tweet directed at him or her that goes like this. Dear Mr. Gowdy, Musburger, Costas, Buck, Nance, Michaels, whomever, I am a fan of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Therefore, I had no rooting interest in the Super Bowl between the Patriots and the Rams, and yet I found you disturbingly biased in favor of X, Y. But all of us have received communications, let's say doing a World Series, an NBA Finals, whatever it may be, and the letters or whatever the form of communication is could be identical except substitute the team. They heard exactly the same broadcast, exactly the same words, and they found that you were biased against the Cardinals or biased for the Cardinals, but only depending on their own rooting interest.
There's no doubt. I mean, you could talk to every broadcaster. Joe Buck almost wrote a whole book on this, where people are after him.
It's absurd. And
Tommy Heinsohn, I remember in the early
Celtics.
80s, was saying when he went to Los Angeles, he was persona non grata because he was seen as being biased. And, you know, you go out. I recall my late stepmom. Boy, she did not like you when you were calling the 97 World Series because she was an Indians fan, you know.
Yeah.
And you were biased against her and her team.
But Marlins fans thought exactly the opposite.
That's right.
And in truth, again, people listen selectively. Game 7 of that World Series in 1997, the Florida Marlins were in only the fifth year of their existence, I think. And they played in a football stadium, in Joe Robbie Stadium, and they had drawn very, very poorly until it became clear they were going to make the playoffs. And now the place is packed. So sometime during Game 7, I say, there are people in Cleveland who have been waiting for this for nearly half a century, and people in South Florida who've been waiting for it since Thursday. So it was pretty clear that as a guy who has an affinity for baseball history, while I was going to call it down the middle, a Cleveland victory would have been more gratifying than a Marlins victory. But I still called it down the middle. And if you listen to it, when the Marlins come back and tie it in the ninth, when they win it in extra innings, especially with the home crowd behind you, I was duly excited.
And when we look at your career, you called a Super Bowl, didn't you?
No, I never did play-by-play of a Super Bowl. I hosted a lot of them.
Yeah. Host. Uh-huh. You called the World Series. How about NBA Finals?
Yes.
In fact, Jordan's last shot as a Bull.
Yep, 98.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. And then you did, how many years did you do the U.S. Open golf, like 15 or so?
Oh, no, not that many. I think maybe a half dozen.
Just a half dozen, yeah. That's amazing.
I was just the host. I wasn't really one of the commentators.
Well, is it not true that you're the only person alive to have won Emmys for entertainment, sports, and news?
I think so.
Isn't that something? What a career you have had. And it all started here at KMOX.
That's true. That's absolutely true.
You know, there's a poll this morning in the Orlando newspaper.
Uh-huh.
Is Bob Costas the greatest sportscaster ever? Mm-hmm. And as of 4 o'clock this morning, you were leading 60% to 40%.
Really?
Yeah. It was attached to a story where you had officially noted that you're looking into other projects beyond NBC. So isn't that? I don't know what the latest is, but folks can go to the Orlando Daily and vote right now.
You know, that strikes me the way that was worded. If it's exactly as you said it, the greatest ever, I would think that no matter who you put up there, with the possible exception of Vin Scully, that there'd be more nays than yays because it's the greatest. Not does he belong somewhere on the list, but there are so many other possibilities that you could make just as strong a case for. I would be surprised if anybody could carry a majority. It'd be a plurality thing, I would think.
Well, you were almost 5 minutes late earlier today. I thought maybe you were in your hotel room just voting away. Left and right.
Yeah.
Our guest is Bob Costas, and he's joining us today on The Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
More of Profiles coming up on KMOX. Now, back to Profiles on The Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Our guest today is Bob Costas.
Don't know what you and the missus are doing in September, but Beth and I are leading a group of KMOX listeners to the Baltic Sea.
Really?
Yeah, we're going to start in Stockholm. Have you been?
Yes.
Oh. How about Helsinki?
Yes, Finland.
Copenhagen?
No. See, I don't think I've ever set foot in Denmark. In fact, I know I haven't.
So you need to write down this number, 800-777-6540, because we're heading there on an Oceania cruise line, which I've never been on, but I'm told it's the best food and the best service. We'll visit Bruges, Belgium. You didn't see the movie In Bruges, did you?
I didn't.
Yes. It's a beautiful, well, it's, the movie is average, but the city is a fairy tale. It's just the beautiful architecture will knock you out. We're going to Riga, Latvia, Tallinn, Estonia. We'll be in London and St. Petersburg, Russia. And you know a thing or two about Russia.
A little.
Yes.
A little. How long does this cruise last?
About 10 days, and we'll be in 9 countries in those 10
wow.
days.
Now, I'm assuming that this is really a first-rate ocean liner.
Well, I'm told that even the competitors of Oceania admit or acknowledge that the food on Oceania is the best in the industry.
Mm-hmm.
So, and you can get some good deals right now. Let's say you're looking for one. They will give you free prepaid gratuities, because sometimes getting off the ship is more expensive than getting on it. And then free dining at all these specialty venues, free internet, free soft drinks, bottled water, cappuccino, teas and juices. No sign of bacon and Gouda sandwiches at all. So,
because there are high instances of food poisoning and seasickness aboard these ocean liners. So it's best to maintain a healthy diet.
I would dispute those allegations made by Bob. I have not
I'm not speaking specifically of Oceania, but you know these stories constantly hit the news of people sick at sea.
Well, people can get sick in sea or on dry land, as you know.
Well, of course.
So,
it happens on an ocean liner, it spreads to most of the passengers, you see.
Sounds like this will be what we call in the broadcast world a make good. But at 800-777-6540, you can join us. Guess what major broadcaster was on the cruise that Beth and I took for our honeymoon in the Caribbean?
How long ago was that?
1992, April of 1992.
A major broadcaster.
Yeah.
Still active?
No, in fact, he's no longer coming down for breakfast, as they say.
I see.
I think he's no longer coming down.
Kurt Gowdy.
No, the late, great Dick Enberg.
Oh, Dick Enberg.
Yeah.
Dick passed away a little more than a year ago.
He was
one of the true greats.
He would not mess up a commercial by pointing out foodborne illnesses on major oceanic vessels.
Yeah.
Our guest today is Bob Costas, the only person in history to have Emmys in entertainment, news, and sports. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, in truth, 26 of the 28 are for sports. There was one for the late night show later. That's the entertainment one. And the one in news for the interview with Jerry Sandusky when the Penn State scandal broke.
Well, I can't wait to read your autobiography when and if it ever comes out, because you have so many great stories, Jerry Sandusky, and then the Olympics, including 1996. Now, I want everybody to listen to this, because right now we think we have seen a couple of instances where the media jumped the gun on a couple of major stories. One is Covington Catholic, the students there at a rally in Washington, D.C., and it seems like that situation is complicated and evolving right now, and maybe what was first reported is not exactly the way it was. The same is true for this BuzzFeed story, which says that the president encouraged his attorney to commit perjury. Now, people are backing off of that. But when you were hosting the Olympics in Atlanta in 1996, everyone and his brother were condemning Richard Jewell, and the only question was, should he get life in prison or should he be given execution for a bombing in Atlanta? And you were the one guy who said, hey, caution here, let's wait for some facts. Am I correct?
Yeah. The bomb went off in Centennial Park, which was one of the few areas surrounding the Olympic venues that wasn't locked down by security because they envisioned it as kind of a free space where people would just enjoy each other's company and soak in a different aspect of the Olympic experience. And so it was vulnerable, and a backpack was left there and it exploded. And Richard Jewell was a security guard, and he actually went over to the area. They apprehended him. They named him as a person of interest. I guess the FBI and Atlanta law enforcement officials named him as a person of interest. And the explanation for that was that they were trying to sweat him, put pressure on him and get him to confess or provide information. But it turned out he was 100% innocent. The perpetrator was Eric Rudolph, the crazy survivalist, whom they couldn't find for like 2 years because he was living in the mountains or whatever. But he was apprehended and he was the guy who actually did it. So what I said on the air was, why rush to any judgment here? Why put the name of a possibly innocent man? And I didn't know what the odds were. I just knew it hadn't been nailed down. Why put the name of an honestly innocent man out there? If it turns out to be false, you've done irreparable damage to his life. If it turns out to be true, why do we have to have it now as opposed to a week from now, a month from now, however long it takes for you to truly have this thing in order? And I think the answer to that was because it was the Olympics and because that TWA flight had blown up upon leaving one of the New York airports just like a week before the Olympics started. And although they sorted that out later, they thought at first that must have been a terrorist attack. So people were on edge going into the Olympics. And I think that they wanted to assure people, hey, we got it. We got the perpetrator. It's not a terrorist. It's a random act. Boom. They wanted that to get out there so that people would continue to come to Olympic events and the tension would be tamped down. That was their perhaps understandable motivation, but it turned out not to be true.
Our guest is Bob Costas, and he's joining us today on The Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
More of Profiles coming up on KMOX. Now, back to Profiles on The Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Our guest is Bob Costas, and we're talking about many different issues. We were talking about Richard Jewell at the 1996 Olympics and the rush to judgment. And today, there's a lot of rush to judgment on many stories. The Twitterverse blows up, and then people who make comments on Twitter are considered news sources.
Of course. Yeah, we talked about this the last time, that there are an increasing number of stories that are nothing but an aggregation of a handful of Twitter posts by who knows whom, anybody. And what the supposed reporter has done is write a few sentences connecting one tweet to the next, and that's the source. What the heck is that?
Well, that's right. You don't even know if the person on Twitter is an actual human being.
That's right.
It could be a bot, probably not weighing in on a news story like that, but could be a Russian operative, an American operative, or just someone wanting anonymity.
But it also could just be any person who's marginally informed or misinformed, uninformed, an angry person, people who
Not to mention mentally ill.
Well, it could be.
Could be.
But also hyper-partisan people, are one way or the other, are more likely to weigh in as commenters, are more likely to tweet. And there's absolutely no requirement that you have even a minimal grounding in facts surrounding the situation, whether it's something really important like the BuzzFeed thing, whether it's somebody commenting on a sports broadcast. There are so many, forget about dopey opinions, so many assertions of supposed fact that you find in tweets and comments that are just objectively untrue. It's not a matter of opinion. It's not a matter of perspective. It's a matter of objective fact.
And nobody's curating them and saying, okay, this one makes sense, this one does not.
They live forever in cyberspace. But with the BuzzFeed thing, I watched a lot of television news, CNN, Fox News, network stuff, and they all said, although they were jumping on it and by implication giving it credence, they all said this story, if true, would be an impeachable offense. They kept saying, if true, if true. But it was repeated enough that at least some people decided that it was true. And one of the outcomes of this is going to be that it arms Trump defenders and their fake news narrative. Forget about the fact that there have been dozens and dozens and dozens of things reported, not by Fox News, not by Newsmax, not by the Daily Caller, not by Breitbart, because they're hyper-partisan outlets, but a number of things that are not favorable to Donald Trump that are not a matter of opinion. They're matters of objective fact, but they're now able to take this one thing and use it as proof of their thesis.
Well, I think I read this morning in the Washington Post that the president on average makes 15.8 errors of fact per day.
They aren't errors. They're either they're either delusional things that he believes are true but are not, or they're lies.
Well, it could be. They could be errors. That he could
Let's weed out the errors. As Carl Bernstein said, and people who take this to be a partisan assessment, I have voted for Republicans before. I had very friendly relationships with George H.W. Bush, with George Bush 43. I was at the White House at their invitation, in the case of Bush 43, three different times. Very friendly with Mitt Romney because of his involvement in the 2002 Salt Lake City Olympics. John McCain and I were quite friendly.
Did you run into Donald Trump in your years in New York City?
Yeah, I'll circle back to that. But the thing with Trump is this. This is not a partisan thing. And this is how somebody who simply acknowledges the facts of the situation gets painted as far left, which I'm not. But that's what happens. Donald Trump's lies are so blatant. Nixon lied. Clinton lied. And even if you suspected, I mean, Nixon was Tricky Dick and Clinton was Slick Willie. Even if you suspected that they were being duplicitous because you thought that was the nature of their character, it usually took quite a while to sift through everything and to nail them dead to rights. In Trump's case, his lies are so preposterous most of the time and so cartoonish that they can be checked in real time. They can be checked in a minute. Like, this is wrong. This is completely wrong. Look, there's thousands of examples, but wait a minute. In Florida, here's what's happening. There are people who are voting two, three times. How? They go back to their car, they put on a disguise, and they come back in. Yeah, that's what happened.
Did he say that?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, that's what happened. And he won the popular vote in the presidential election, but the reason why it was reported that he lost by 3 million in the popular vote is that there were so many false ballots. Now, think how many false ballots there would have to be, and they'd have to all be for Hillary Clinton. You'd have to have more than 3 million of them to turn that around.
Now, of course, Hillary Clinton had some errors, too.
Oh, Hillary Clinton came with lots of baggage. She was a very flawed candidate, and that's part of the reason why Trump won.
This is Bob Costas with us on The Voice of St. Louis, KMOX. Back in a moment.
More of Profiles coming up on KMOX. Now, back to Profiles on The Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Okay, where were we before the break? We were talking about the president and facts, or...
And a couple of things left hanging. On the Richard Jewell story.
Yes.
In 1997, the Braves played the Marlins in the National League Championship Series, which happened to be on NBC. So we're only talking about a year later, post-Olympics. And so I'm broadcasting the game, and the stage manager taps me on the shoulder as we go to commercial between innings. And he says, Mr. Costas, Richard Jewell is outside the broadcast booth. He'd like to come in and speak with you.
Wow.
And I said, okay, next half inning, bring him down. And so we go to another commercial, and Richard Jewell enters the booth, very unassuming, shy man, who has since passed away, by the way, died when he was still in his 40s. And this is what he says to me, verbatim. Mr. Costas, and that's how he addressed me, Mr. Costas, I just want to thank you for what you did at the Olympics, and my mother wants to thank you too. And you realize that you have a certain responsibility, which we all carry out imperfectly, but you're aiming for an ideal of not only being factual, but being fair. because you affect people's lives one way or another. At least you can.
As a matter of fact, speaking of phone calls, weren't you once in the NBA Finals in 1994?
Yeah.
During the car chase, if you call it that, between O.J. Simpson and the long arm of the law, and from his Bronco, O.J. called you?
Yeah. I apologize if people have heard this story before, but
I have not.
It's the way it happens. Game 5 of the NBA Finals between the Rockets and the Knicks at Madison Square Garden. So I'm hosting it, and this Bronco chase is unfolding, and everyone will remember this, that it seemed like every single American was watching it. It was on every network as the Bronco went down the 405 at like 30 miles an hour, and he's in the backseat, and A.C. Cowlings, his friend, former teammate with the Buffalo Bills, is with him, and according to A.C., as he's communicating with the police, O.J. has a gun to his head. So I find out subsequently that he tried to reach me. He had like an early cell phone, a car phone, and I was in whatever the Rolodex is for that kind of mechanism. And he called my house here in St. Louis. No one was home, no answering machine, so it must have rung and rung. And then he had the number of the studio at NBC. And he called because he had worked with me on the NFL show, same studio for the NBA. But we were doing it because it was the finals. We were doing it from Madison Square Garden. So there was no one really in the studio. So he calls, and an engineer picked up the phone. Studio 3B, is Bob Costas there? No, he's not. I need to speak to Bob Costas. Well, he's not here. He's at Madison Square Garden. I have to speak to him now. Who's calling? O.J. Simpson. Yeah, right. Click. And the tech hangs up on him. So that was on a Friday. The Knicks win the game. We go back to Houston. The Knicks are up 3-2. Houston wins on Sunday, 3-3. Game 7, not till Wednesday. So I'm hanging around the hotel in Houston, and the phone rings, and it's a woman from Time Magazine. Conversation lasts less than a minute. She says, we hear that O.J. Simpson tried to call you from the Bronco. I answer truthfully, I think, at the time, no, that didn't happen. Thanks for calling. Bye. That's the end of it. Now fast forward to November of 94. He's in the L.A. County Jail, but the trial doesn't start until January. And I get word that he wants to see me. So the next time I'm in L.A., another footnote, Robert Kardashian, who was part of his legal team.
Right. We forget that, don't we?
Comes to pick me up at the hotel. And I'm going to go to the L.A. County Jail and visit with O.J. But from there, I've got to hop a flight to San Francisco to do some 49ers interviews. And in my rush, because you know I tend to be not punctual, so in my rush to get downstairs where Mr. Kardashian is waiting for me, I'm throwing stuff into the dop kit. And wouldn't you know it, I stick my hand in the dop kit, and there's an exposed razor, and it slices my index finger. No lie, it slices my index finger. So now I got to run down to the gift shop at the hotel and get some gauze and some Band-Aids to wrap the thing up, because you know how these razor cuts are. They ooze blood for a while. All right, so now I get in the car with Kardashian, and he brings me to the L.A. County Jail. When you walk past all the reporters who are still hanging around there, and in we go, and it's me. Kardashian didn't come in. A.C. Cowlings and O.J., whom they bring around a corner, and he's wearing a blue prison jumpsuit. Looked to me like he'd lost about 20 pounds. But his personality was eerily intact. So as he comes around the corner and he's moving toward where he's going to sit down, he goes, Bob Costas, just like I was walking into Studio 3B.
Wow.
And he sits down and he says, Bob, they're dogging me. And I said, well, I guess so, Juice. And he says, well, this is a hell of a way to get out of having to go to Buffalo for another Cornelius Bennett feature. So it's like he's joking around.
Unbelievable.
So now they take the shackles off, except for one on his ankle, which they shackled to the leg of the chair. And the way you shake hands with somebody, there's a glass partition, you put your hand up against theirs. And as I did so, he sees the gauze and he sees a little bit of blood. And I swear this is what he says. Wait a minute. You did it.
Hilarious.
And then he goes on from there in this conversation to try and convince me that he didn't. And I'm noncommittal. I'm thinking maybe a trial, something that mitigates his involvement would come out, maybe one chance in 100. of that. And he's saying things like, you know, Bob, you know me, I'm a smart guy. If I was going to commit a murder, I wouldn't leave a glove. I wouldn't do that. And I'm thinking, once you cross that line, all bets are off concerning your previous patterns of behavior. We're in no man's land here. That was the last time I ever saw or spoke to him, but he explained to me during the conversation that the reason why he had called, and Cowlings confirmed that he did, the reason he called was because he felt that he wasn't getting a fair shake in the press, not so much concerning the crime, but what kind of person he was. His character was being assassinated, and he thought that I would be a friendly voice and I would interview him or whatever. Now, if he had gotten through, obviously we would have attempted to patch him on the air. And that would have been one of the most, I guess, memorable moments in the history of American television, because I would have had to have asked him, OJ, you know, no matter how he would answer, did you do it? And if you didn't do it, why would you run?
Uh-huh.
You have the wherewithal. You could defend yourself. You should be screaming from the rooftops that you're an innocent man.
Amazing story. You were a friend of his. Didn't you guys like go to Broadway shows together
We never went to a Broadway show, but we went to dinner many times. We played golf many times.
You want to know something which you may find amazing? Overused word, I know, in 2019, but recently I was listening once again to an old interview that Kevin Horrigan and I had conducted with Robin McNeil, who was the host of the McNeil Lehrer NewsHour.
Yeah.
And we were asking him, why on your PBS NewsHour have you never discussed the OJ case? And he just thought it was kind of tawdry and below the seriousness of real stories. My, how far we've come.
You know, I would dispute Mr. McNeil, who was a very, very esteemed journalist, so stipulate that. If you're just talking about the day-to-day speculation and the kind of court TV stuff during the trial, I think that would not have been appropriate for the PBS NewsHour. They're more high-minded than that. However, there was a story there about race in America, about policing, the LAPD's previous true problems with the African-American community obviously impacted this case, where an obviously guilty man was acquitted, but it didn't happen in a vacuum. Those things could have been discussed and would have been completely pertinent on the PBS NewsHour.
And no doubt, but times have changed. In his book, Who Killed CBS, Peter Boyer says, and I wasn't watching Walter Cronkite that night, but in August 1977, when Elvis died, apparently Cronkite didn't cover the story until the 16th or 17th minute of the newscast.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember having those conversations with the producers at Later, and I'm not comparing the importance of that program to Walter Cronkite's evening newscast, but when we did that show between 88 and 94, and we talked about the guest list, one of the things that came up was, at that time, it's interesting now because now I'm the venerable Bob Costas, but I was young, I was in my 30s, and my cultural frame of reference was different, you know? I remember the conversation being, if this show was hosted by someone who was a generation older than you, he would wonder why you want Roy Orbison on the show. Now, if Roy Orbison was still alive and I put him on the show, people would say, thank you, Grandpa. You know, who's next? Well, the new Christy Minstrels?
Didn't one time you tell the folks at CNN, thank you, but I'd prefer not to do the Larry King show tonight?
Yes.
Can we hold that story through this? And we'll find out why.
Okay.
How about that for a cliffhanger?
And you still have to get to my personal interactions with Donald Trump.
Oh, I forgot about that. We're bearing the lead.
Like Cronkite did in 1977.
The up-close
now
personal.
I'm all shook up.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, thank you.
Hi, this is Charlie Brennan. We'll continue with those stories from Bob Costas on the next edition of Profiles. Thanks for joining us. Make it a good one.
You've been listening to Profiles. If you missed any of this episode or to hear other profiles, go to KMOX.com and click On Demand.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.